Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Prahlad, the saintly son of Hiranyakasipu. We read texts 33 and 34, which don't have purports, and 35, which does have a purport. We'll chant 35. So Prahlad has just given a few answers or statements. In reply to the question, where did you learn this? Where did you learn this bhakti yoga? And he's described a few things he heard from Narad Muni. Now the narrator continues. After Prahlad had spoken in this way and become silent, Hiranyakashipu, blinded by anger, threw him off his lap onto the ground. Indignant and angry, his reddish eyes, like molten copper, Hiranyakashipu said to his servants, "Oh, demons, take this boy away from me. He deserves to be killed. Kill him as soon as possible." Please repeat. I am me batri ha so yan hitva Svan Sarido Damah Pitvibhya Hantu Pado Yo Vishnur Dasavat Architi. I am me Bhatriha Soyan Hitvasvan surido dhamaha Petrivyahantu padayo Vishnardasa vadachiti Ayam me bhatrihasoya Hitvasman suriddho dhammah Pitrivyahantu padaya Vishno dasa vadachati Ayam me bhartriha soyam Hitvasvan suriddho dhammah Pitrivyahantu padaya Vishnudasa vadarchati Ayame bharti hasya Yasvam Sridodama Nityavyahantupadayo Vishnu Daso Vadachati Ayame Bhakti Hasuyam Yadvasvan Sarato Dhamaha Nityavyahantupadayo Vishnu Dasa Vada Ayam Me Bhakti Hasayam Nidvasvam Sridho Dhamma Pitivyahanta Padayo Vishnu Dasa Vada Chati Ayame Bharti Hasuyam Yadvasvan Sridho Dhamma Vishnu Dasavara Chiti Ayame Bharti Hasuyam Hidva Sansurdo Dhamma Pitivyantaspado Yo Vishnu Dasa Vadachati Ayame Bharti Hasuyam Hidva Sansurdo Dhamma Pitivyahantupadayo Vishnu Dasa Vadachati Ayam This May My Vataha Killer of the Brother Sa He Ayam This hitva giving up swan own sarida well wishers adhama very low pitrivyahantu of him who killed his uncle Hiranyakasipu. Pada, at the 2 feet. Ya, he who? Vishnu, of Lord Vishnu. Dasavat, like a servant. Archati, serves. Translation in purport. This boy, Prahlad, is the killer of my brother, for he has given up his family to engage in the devotional service of the enemy, Lord Vishnu, like a menial servant. Hiranyakasipu considered his son, Prahlad Maharaj, to be the killer of his brother because Prahlad was engaged in the devotional service of Lord Vishnu. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj would be elevated to Sarupya liberation. And in that sense, he resembled Lord Vishnu. It means he would take the same form as Vishnu, forearm form, when he became liberated. Therefore, Prahlad was to be killed by Hiranyakashipu. Devotees, Vaishnavas, attain the liberations of Sarupya, Salokya, Sarshti, and Samipya, whereas the Mayavadis are supposed to attain the liberation known as Sayujya. Sayujya Mukti, however, is not very secure, whereas Sarupya Mukti, Salokya Mukti, Sarishti Mukti, and Samipya Mukti are most certain. Although the servants of Lord Vishnu and Narayan in the Vaikuntha planets are equally situated with the Lord, the devotees there know very well that the Lord is the master, whereas they are servants. Oma Ganatimanandas Yaganjana Shivakaya Chakshushan Militamina Tasmai Sri Gurube Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shayuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Saganaraganatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadrutam Prajana Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Dalita Shri Shakam Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tata Kanchana Gurangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Vishvamanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchkalpa Tubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhye Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namo. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasaringo Bhaktam. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ayam me vartraha soyam hitva swan suriddo dama pitivyahantu padoyo vishnu dasvad architi. Here Hiranyakasipu says that Prahlad has given up his well-wishers, Surida, his very good friends. So he's very low. And it's as if he killed Hiranyakasipu's brother because he's allied himself now with Vishnu. This makes Hiranyakasipu very angry. And therefore he becomes blind to him, to self-realization, to understanding himself. He's lost to himself. He's overpowered by anger. And he's realizing now that Prahlad is out of his control. So we'll discuss today what Krishna says about anger. By the end of the class, you'll know what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita about anger. Hiranyakasipu decides to have Prahlad killed. So this is quite shocking, a father killing his son. Last night I remembered that my father, when I was five, lifted me up, a little five-year-old, over the edge of a ledge that was over a dam. We were on a family trip. And we went walking on the platform of the dam so that, it was a big dam and you could look down and the tourists were invited. And so my father picked me up and just as a joke, he held me over the ledge, but he didn't drop me. But Hiranyakasipu dropped Prahlad over the edge of the mountain. And, so it gives you some idea. Ganesh was saying yesterday that his father, his dad, followed the yoga teachings, Yogananda Paramahamsa. So kind of pious, but even in the family, the sister became ungodly. She became very doubtful about God. So in our own families, we have we sometimes see the demonic nature in the qualities of our brothers and sisters, or in our parents sometimes. Also some pious qualities. One time when I was at my parents' home, I said to them straight out, to my dad, I said, "You're going to have to leave your property and your wealth when you die. Everything you worked hard for." You know, I was making the point that, you shouldn't work for temporary gain. But of course, it was too late. He had already done that. But still, I tried to make the point, you're going to lose it now. You're going to die. And he became pretty upset, so much so he knew what was going on and said, you can just keep your philosophy to yourself when you're in my home, because this is my temple. So what does that mean? He means he thought he is God, at least within the home. But his dominion lasted only a couple of more years. Then time removed him. Krishna, in the form of time, takes away everyone. And this summer I visited my two brothers and my sister, and I had to tolerate their demonic behavior. They drink alcohol, they eat meat. So I wouldn't sit at the meals. But in some ways the visit was nice. But they didn't want to hear about Krishna. They made it very clear. We don't, have an interest in that. So I'm glad to be with this audience who does want to hear about Krishna. You're much nicer. By studying this pastime, what are we going to learn? It sounds very shocking, A father wants to kill his son. Why is this in the Bhagavatam? It's there so we can become more conscious of our human nature. Human nature is divided. There's divine and demonic qualities and behavior in human life. And we can learn this in this study, how things can go bad. We have to be careful that things don't go bad in our own lives, in our own dealings with others. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a point that when we read about the demonic in the Bhagavatam, it actually brings out the teachings of the Lord better than if we would just read about the teachings on their own. When we see how the teachings are defied by atheists, when we hear the arguments against the teachings and how the devotees clarify the teachings, it underscores what's being taught. And you could say it's a catalyst. The demonic behavior that's described in the Bhagavatam is a catalyst to bring out the teachings, the highest teachings. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, in the case of Arjuna, if he hadn't had a conflict, an inner conflict at the beginning, then Krishna's teachings to humanity would not have been spoken. So Arjuna was facing this family conflict and the demonic behavior of his family members and cousins. The Vaishnavas have an ideal. They want to avoid taking part, either directly or indirectly, in causing any suffering to others, human beings or any living beings. We're nonviolent. But when it's necessary, then there has to be a war, so the philosophy makes provision for that. There's kshatriyas who can administer violence. But ultimately, the devotees want to get out of the world and attain happiness in a heart-to-heart relationship to Krishna. Or sometimes, even as we're reading in this song we sang this morning, the devotee doesn't even want liberation. Here in the purport today, there are the various types of liberation mentioned. Sometimes the devotee attains liberation in Vaikuntha, but in this prayer to Damodar, the writer is saying, I don't even want to be liberated. As long as I can remember your sweet childhood pastimes, and those can be in my heart. But Srila Prabhupada describes this ideal to us many times in his tapes, the idea of an everlasting life of unlimited happiness with Krishna. And to get there, we have to practice divine behavior and avoid the demonic behavior. But we're really in the same position as Prahlad. All around us in the world, there's demonic behavior, and it has an effect on us. There's so much conflict and suffering being generated by the demonic elements. And it will become worse. The Shastra says in Kali Yuga it'll just keep getting worse. Of course, there's a period in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, this golden age, where it's not so bad, but I want to remind you of the types of demonic behavior that we're surrounded by, we have to live with. Animal killing is so prominent, animal slaughter. And Srila Prabhupada said it leads to war. There are karmic reactions to animal slaughter. People have no idea, practically. And it's not like, you know, just wars that take place because of killing animals. Rather, you have a military-industrial complex making excuses for wars, staging events that are just excuses for going to war. I became aware of this a long time ago when I was a student, and we were protesting the Vietnam War. We were protesting the manufacture and the sale of bombs and arms. But it's still going on. More and more, it's increasing. The developing countries are being sold arms. The Middle East is buying a lot of arms. Ladies, can you pay attention now? Okay. I looked it up. This year, $66 billion will be spent on arms. And of that, the United States has 75% of the market. So the powers, the military-industrial powers in the country, they're not aware of it, but one cause of this type of behavior is all the animal slaughter that goes on. They're not even aware of that. They're insensitive to animal slaughter. They're insensitive to the suffering that's caused by war. Another demonic behavior is legalized abortion. And there's a chance that will lead to the legalized killing of old people, euthanasia. Now, women are saying, oh, having a baby is such a burden. I don't want to bear that burden. So having old people around is also a burden. As far as the state is concerned, as far as the government is concerned, once you stop producing an income and you're no longer paying taxes to the state, it's time for you to die. Because the state otherwise has to shell out the money that they've been taking from you in Social Security. And they don't want to do that because they've already spent the money. So they have created panels and committees and bureaucratic departments who have the power to decide what constitutes so-called effective care for old people. There are people who make decisions. What's effective care for an aging person? In the last year of a person's life, most of the healthcare costs are incurred. The very last year, that's when it gets really expensive. So there, in Washington, they would rather enact laws saying, let's just kill people at that stage and save money. If they want to save money, then they'll hold back on the health care. So it may well be that we'll see old people being killed before we leave our bodies. It may become a law. You might think, well, how could the Americans ever stand for that? The Americans are such good people. But they're not saying anything about all the millions of aborted babies. They're not saying anything about all the murder and the maiming and the displacement of millions of Muslims in the last 10 years. They're thinking like the typical demon thinks. This is my friend. This is my enemy. We have to kill. We have to go to war. They don't even think about it very much. They just accept what politicians say, what the media says. So Krishna describes all this in the Bhagavad Gita. The demons think there's just this one life. And they become bewildered by their desires, by lust, by the power that they accumulate. And they become motivated by anger when they don't get their way. Wrath. They really feel like Hiranyakasipu. I'm going to kill this Prahlad. Very harsh. And they're deceitful. Very deceitful. They'll lie. Because they don't have any knowledge, higher knowledge. Absence of knowledge means ignorance. They're ignorant, Krishna says. But they're very proud and they're stubborn and they're strong. They're strong in their envy of the Supreme Lord. Supreme Personality of Godhead is in their hearts and in everyone's heart. But they're envious of the Lord, Lord's presence in everyone's heart. They don't want people to act according to their conscience. They want to tell people, oh, you can kill babies in the womb, it's no problem. Women have to have their rights. You can kill animals, it's no problem. There's no soul. And so they don't want the Lord in the heart to be able to tell people, no, no, don't kill animals, don't kill babies. They don't want that conscience to be awakened. They argue against God's existence. But at the same time, they make a show of religion, Krishna says. But they don't follow regulative principles. They just make a show. And they're very conceited. They're proud of their education. I got my degree at Harvard. I'm in the elite. I'm proud of my money. And because I have all this money and education, people should worship me. Krishna says they think like that. People should worship them. Not, heaven forbid, tax them. The very rich people are very afraid of being taxed. I looked up some statistics. In 1950, the top 400 wealthy families in America paid 50% of their income as taxes. And now the number of rich families has increased. They have a number, 16,000. They figure the top of the 1% amounts to about 16,000 wealthy families. Does that number sound familiar? Who else has 16,000 families? Anybody you know? Dwarkadish, right? 16,000 wives, 16,000 families. So it's a coincidence they chose that number, 16,000. And those families, now the wealthiest 16,000 families in America, pay only 16% of their income as tax. Compared to 50 years ago, they paid 50%. And why do they do that? Why do they get away with that? Because they think nobody's equal to us in wealth and strength. Therefore, we should have privileges. We should be able to advance our selfish desires. And nobody should be able to check us. We don't need gurus. We don't need authorities telling us what to do and what not to do. So they come up with their own ideas. Let's have globalism. Let's let the corporations in the country produce the goods and the services in other countries. That's not good for the markets at home. That means that people lose jobs at home. It leads to a decline in manufacturing at home if you send all the manufacturing to other countries. And who's to blame for offshoring all the jobs? The U.S. corporations, the policymakers, the economists, and the financial media that report on this and promote it. All the magazines like, you know, business magazines and newspapers like Wall Street Journal. They decide to sacrifice the U.S. economy to the short-term profits that the few rich people will make by globalism. So we have not got the right kind of leadership in the West any longer, and therefore the West is declining. So the atmosphere that we live in is like the atmosphere Prahlad was living in, and we're expected to somehow be like Prahlad and act like divine. We have a divine nature. That's what we can learn from these pastimes. Does anybody have any questions about this? Is there a microphone for devotees to use?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class. I like the good points you made. To have the right kind of leader, you also need to have the right kind of people. So at the present time, it's very difficult from our point of view to, you know, to have that kind of people to ask for the right kind of leader who can help in our, from our point of view spiritually. So if someone has to argue that, well, if I accept your point of view, that means it's like I have to become a religious person. And from tradition, we heard that sometimes in the, like in your very culture, you know, if you're born in minority or you're born Sudra, and then you're deprived to go to, you know, like you have some facilities or access to education, for example. Here in America,
you're deprived of what?
Education, like for example,
education.
A Sudra.
You don't get an education.
Here, okay. A Sudra can become a president of the United States. And that's very appealing to them, that if you are born there in a place where you propound a philosophy in which you, at that time, not ourselves, but I'm saying that they have this conception that if you are low class, like the caste system, we don't like that. We embrace this kind of teachings here in America, this kind of system in which even a person who is, you know, low class can become a president of the United States or any high position.
So what's the question?
What would you answer to that?
You mean you're saying like India has a caste system and the lower caste can't become high leaders?
In our present situation here, the way the system is, that any person, if you go to school, you're not seen by that.
In America, you're not regarded as so much, you're not held back by your low birth.
Therefore, it might not be appealing for the ordinary kind of people to embrace this kind of system, like the Vedic system, in which you just accept, okay, I was born like this, my karma, what to do.
In America, people who come from a lower background, poverty or lack of education, it's true they're given opportunities sometimes to overcome that by getting education, and sometimes not. Sometimes it's held against them if they don't rise in the proper way. Or maybe it's not. But also in India, the Shudras, the outcasts, even lower than the Shudras, they've made political propaganda so that they can be treated more equally. There are laws now in their favor that there's reserved jobs for the outcasts and that sort of thing. I think any place in the world, I mean, these kinds of things. Archita, you want to say a comment?
Yeah, but that's such an outmoded statement. America's never had a woman president. India has. So you're so advanced and you can't vote for a woman to be president? India has had a woman president. And there are still very strong women political leaders in India like Sonia Gandhi. So, you know, it's an outmoded statement, that kind of statement that India is keeping people back. I mean, you're keeping people back even worse. Okay. It's just not factual. The real fact is that no matter what your system is, you need a good leader. You can't have a leaderless system. And it's obvious that the system that you have now, the leaders are no good. So we're giving you a system by which you can replace those no good leaders with better leaders. Are you interested? You want to hear? And I'm sure anybody here, even the newest bhakti, can start to tell them why, if they follow this style of life, they can wind up with a better leader than the one they have now.
Okay. Even in ISKCON, the ladies are getting into trouble because they're saying women should be allowed to become gurus. Srila Prabhupada wanted, according to some evidence, Prabhupada wanted all his disciples to become gurus. But there's a big discussion on the internet that's been going on for a week or two, and some people are saying, no, only very, very, very advanced women can become spiritual leaders, and it'll just ruin ISKCON if we, you know, give in to the feminists and they want to make the women equal. Even in ISKCON, these questions of status arise and are debated. Rabindranath.
Yeah, you mentioned how the rich people just pay 16% in taxes, but the Vedic system is 25% or up to 25%. So
okay.
How much, what do you think they should pay, actually?
Well, I haven't studied it. I'm not an expert. 25 sounds good to me. I accept that. They have a lot of offshore accounts. You know, they have like about $25 trillion, it's estimated, in offshore accounts or foreign bank accounts. $25 trillion hidden, you know, away. Any other comments, questions? Otherwise, Bhrigupati has an announcement. You can give the mic to Bhrigupati. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Glorious Srila Prabhupada.
Krishna Prem Prabhu asked me to announce that there's a Govardhan Pooja program at his house this weekend, Saturday. Begins at 1 o'clock and it ends at 4 o'clock, and everybody's welcome to come. Krishna Prem, Metta. And if anybody would like the details, you can talk to Shastrakrit.
Talk to Shastrakrit if you want to go to a program on Saturday, a Govardhan Puja program. Hare Krishna.